This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Census numbers issued last week captured snapshots of a country in transition. Broward County in South Florida, home to the largest single influx of new African American residents last year. South Dakota, where the Hispanic population is both minuscule and one of the fastest growing in the country. And Texas, now the fourth majority minority state, where an estimated 50.2% of the population is non-white. As people flow around the country searching for jobs, good futures for their children, or attractive places to retire, patterns develop that change neighborhoods and cities, culture, economics, and politics. Blacks are moving back to the South, reversing a trend of northern migration that spanned most of the last century. Whites continue to drift away from the Northeast, and almost every place is becoming more Hispanic. So today we're looking at the latest census numbers to get an idea of what's happening around the country and why, what forces attract African Americans back to the South, and how are communities there changing to greet them. How are smaller communities in the Midwest and Southeast adapting to newly arrived Latinos? Later in the show, Mark Mothersbaugh, the frontman for those New Wave Spuds Devo, joins us. But first, we want to hear from those of you on the front lines of demographic change. Is your neighborhood getting more diverse or less so? How are newcomers changing your community? If you're Black and if you've moved to the South, why? Do you plan to stay? If you've moved out of the Northeast, how come? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. It can be hard to listen to these spools of numbers and picture the individual lives that create them, so we start today with a story. Michigan's Hispanic population is not growing at anywhere near the rate of California's or Arizona's, but it's growing and changing the dynamics of what was formerly a very Black and white state. Jose Hernandez is part of that influx. He graduated from law school in Lansing this spring and decided to stay on for a while, and he joins us now from Lansing. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, good afternoon.
Your move from San Antonio to Lansing, was that strange?
It was quite strange. You know, before I moved here, I never realized, I mean, where is Lansing, basically? When I was living in San Antonio, I didn't know much about Michigan, except your common areas, which is, you know, Detroit, basically.
Right. Long underwear was something I suspect you didn't know much about either.
That's correct.
Yeah. What made you decide to stay?
Well, it seems like it's a better opportunity for someone up here in the sense that, especially, you know, like a Hispanic, a bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is an influx of Hispanics coming over here. Many of them are just recently starting to have their voices heard. It seems like, and the few that are here, they're not being represented properly because of maybe of the language barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like it opens more doors for someone with my skills, which is I'm bilingual, to be able to acquire employment.
I wonder if the people who have lived there a longer time, the Black and white, new arriving Hispanics must be something of a, well, they're not used to it, are they?
They're not. One of the funniest things that happened to me when I first got here was I moved over here to attend law school. So
mm-hmm.
I found an apartment, and then after a few months of living there, I became quite a good friends with the person that I pay my rent to, which was just an office worker there.
Mm-hmm.
And as we got comfortable, she asked me a question. And she goes, you're Latino, right? And I said, yes, I am. She goes, I got a question. And the first thing she said is, what's the deal with all the Mexicans coming over here? I was like, well, that's a shock. I mean, I've never been asked that before. So, you know, the way I reacted was, well, what do you mean? What are you trying to ask me? And her question was, how come you people don't incorporate into our culture? And I go, well, what do you mean? I'm bicultural. And her biggest concern was the language and the fact that the people seem to be segregated or cornered and they don't really get incorporated into their normal society. And the biggest issue was mainly the language. She felt that if they're living here, they need to instantly start speaking English. If they're living here, they need to instantly start doing more of what we consider an American way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a shock for them because Latinos, especially Hispanics, we're very, you know, as a group, we're very family-oriented, and we tend to keep our culture.
Is that true in a relatively small Hispanic community there in Lansing?
I think so. I mean, it's easy to see that many of them have kept their traditions and their cultures, just like where I come from, where, you know, San Antonio being a major Hispanic center. We still follow a lot of our old family traditions that were maybe based out of Mexico or other Latin American countries. It seems like the ones that are here do the same thing, and including the language. For many of them, it's easy to continue speaking Spanish regardless of the fact that maybe in school or anything else they're being taught English only. At home, the language is still strong. Some of them have even lost the management of the language, where they can say they're fully fluent, but they're still partially Spanish speakers, because that's part of their culture. And some people tend to instantly feel offended because we do not lose our language, we do not lose our customs and our backgrounds.
Well, Mr. Hernandez, we wish you good luck there in Lansing, Michigan, however long you plan to stay.
Oh, thank you so much.
Jose Hernandez, a graduate of Cooley Law School and a new resident of Lansing, Michigan. Well, joining us now is William Fry, a demographer and a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. He's the co-author of America by the Numbers, a field guide to the U.S. population. And nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And we just heard Jose's story out of Michigan. He's a part of a bigger trend, Hispanic population spreading out into, well, all kinds of areas.
That's right. These new numbers from the census show that Hispanics are at least 5% of the population in 28 states, up from 16 states in only 1990. And, you know, within those states and within other states, they're clustered at much higher percentages in some of the communities. And it does make a difference, particularly in the new areas that the Hispanic people are moving into, because the people who are the long-term residents there sometimes takes them a little while to adapt to these newcomers coming in.
Well, even some big cities that you would think be accustomed to change, sometimes they have difficulties dealing with an influx of new kinds of people as well. So we'll have to see how that goes. But given, as you look at these patterns, what are the next Hispanic hotspots going to be, do you think?
Well, you know, if you look at the list of states, the states that are majority-minority, with Texas, of course, being the one that's most celebrated, I think we could have predicted that. People were on a treadmill there. When's Texas actually going to come across? And these new estimates showed that to be the case. I have my eye on a few of the states that are a little further down the list, but they're changing very rapidly in their minority population. Arizona, Nevada, and Florida. They're only at this point about 39% minority, but they've done enormous changes. Nevada was almost 80% white in 1990, just 15 years ago, and with these new numbers, it's almost 60% white. That's kind of a dramatic shift for states like that. So I think these states in fast-growing parts of the country are not only growing in their white populations, but much more so in their minority populations.
We want to hear what's happening to your neighborhood, your town, your city. Our number, 800-989-8255. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. Later in the program, we'll get into the politics of this, measuring not necessarily by a state or city, but by maybe congressional district. But let's get some callers now on the line. And this is Isolde. Isolde joining us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hello.
Hello.
I live here in Columbus, Ohio, and I've been a bilingual caseworker for one of the local hospitals, one of our outreach programs now for the past 3.5 years. And within those years, I've noticed a huge influx in our Hispanic population. And you can also tell throughout the city, because there's a lot of programs that cater to non-English speaking, well, to the Hispanic population. We have a Hispanic coalition. We have interpreters at the hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always tell in the neighborhoods when the Hispanic community starts moving in, because you start seeing a lot of the different grocery stores popping up. But a lot of the Hispanic community here, a lot of them haven't been registered on the census, because a lot of them are undocumented. So there's about probably over 100,000 Hispanics here in Columbus, Ohio alone.
And from what you could tell us, Olde, what do most people there do, most of them do for a living?
Yeah, that's. I think what attracts them to this area is primarily the home construction, like roofing. There's a lot of new builds in the area for homes, landscaping, kitchen work, that sort of thing. And I just wanted to address something that the last caller had stated about the barrier, the language barrier.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed a lot with our clients that depending on their age, their generation that they're here, Those who are 50 and over usually will have a basic education of maybe first or second grade. Those in their 30s will have maybe junior high, and those in their 20s might have high school. So I think that plays a lot to whether or not they're going to learn the language, because a lot of them are illiterate and they can't even read in their own Spanish language. And also transportation issues to get to English classes, and a lot of them are isolated because they do not speak the language here, so they're afraid to leave their house, and they don't have the same social structure and community structure that they had back at home. So that also affects a lot of whether or not someone's going to go out and actually learn the language.
Well,
they feel safer together.
Interesting, several points there, but let me ask William Fry. It used to be particularly, in the north and northeastern parts of the United States, Hispanic people were associated with migrant farm labor. Not anymore.
No, that's right. Things have changed quite a bit. And, this sort of fanning out of the Hispanic population, really from the Latin America and from the Southwest, is much more of a permanent phenomenon. And as the caller mentioned, there are lots of job opportunities opening up in the service fields and construction and retail and so forth that, they see these as good jobs. And once they hear about these jobs from their friends or from their family, they just keep following where they are, and the movement keeps going.
Mm-hmm. Isolde, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
You have a great program. Keep up the good work.
Thanks very much. We appreciate that. We're talking about slow, but in some cases dramatic moves by certain ethnic populations in the United States. We want to hear your story. Give us a call at 800-989-8255 to relate just how these moves have impacted your town, or if you're part of the migration, what led you to go from south to the north or east to the west or vice versa. Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Through most of the 20th century, the migration was south to north for thousands and thousands of African Americans. In the late 1990s and now into this century, the trend is reversing. Blacks moving south, especially to the suburbs of major cities. Hispanics, meanwhile, have spread out well beyond California, Texas, and Arizona. If you're African American or Hispanic and you've joined this trend, even if you don't necessarily see it as a trend, call and tell us your story. Or if your town has seen an influx of new ethnicities, 800-989-8255, or email us, TOTN@npr.org. Our guest is William Fry, a demographer and visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. He's at their studio here in Washington, D.C. Let's get another caller on the line. Joyce. Joyce is calling from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, hi. I have a question. I was wondering, based on the information Mr. Fry mentioned, where is Oregon rating as far as its influx of African American and or Latinos, if he knows the answer to that?
Mr. Fry?
Well, let me see. I memorize these, but I'll have some numbers in front of me here. It's grown its African American population by about 6% over the last 4 years, which is reasonably fast. And as far as the Hispanic population, it's grown about 23%. So it's fast growing in terms of both of those groups. And I would say a lot of that movement into Oregon, as with the whites, is coming from California, where there's just a spreading out of minorities beyond the state lines.
Hmm. Of course, I'm a native California, so I guess you're right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, Joyce, when did you move to Oregon?
I actually moved to Oregon by way of Arizona in 99. I relocated from San Francisco Bay Area in 96 from California to Arizona, and then now we're here.
Joyce, thanks very much. Good luck to you.
Hey.
Bye-bye. William Fry, among the two next states that people think will be majority-minority, Oregon not among them, I don't think, Maryland and New York, what's the factor there?
Well, I think, especially with New York, there are two things going on. There's an out-migration of whites just because of a variety of reasons. The pricey housing market in the New York metropolitan area and just in the other part of New York State where job opportunities aren't that very strong,
mm-hmm.
There's this movement to the Sun Belt. And then, of course, there's a continued immigration to New York, which is the major melting pot of the United States and has been for a long time. So, this is kind of more of the same. I think the new ingredient is a decline or the out-migration of the white population there. Now, for Maryland, Maryland is sitting on the cusp of a major metropolitan area that's one of our melting pot places, which is Washington, D.C. So there's the spillover of the Hispanic and other immigrant groups into the suburbs of Washington, D.C., which are in Maryland. And then there, of course, has been the longtime suburbanization of blacks from D.C. into the Maryland suburbs. And this is also going on around Baltimore, too. But I think the juxtaposition with Washington, D.C. is a lot to do with Maryland's change.
Let's get another caller on the line. Sophia. Sophia calling from Oakland, California.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to say that, particularly in the Bay Area in California, I feel like in Oakland and a lot of the traditionally ghetto areas where the poor communities are, a lot of young white people are moving in, for to be in close proximity to San Francisco. And I just wanted to hear a comment about African-American and Hispanic low-income people being pushed out of their traditional neighborhoods.
Well, if I can address that a little bit, we've seen something here in the Washington, D.C. area that addresses that to some degree, maybe the other end of the spectrum, in that there's this very high, hot housing market in the District of Columbia and in the inner suburbs. And these new estimates have shown that, in fact, the white percentage of population in the district and in two of the inner suburbs has gone up as a result of this kind of gentrification phenomenon. The longer-term residents, many of them African Americans, are selling their homes for a nice profit and moving somewhere else. Now, the traditional way of looking at this is maybe as a displacement phenomenon, which may be going on in Oakland as well. So it's not an unusual occurrence, but it means that there needs to be some more affordable housing around for the people who aren't able to live in those locations.
And that's a problem in a lot of places, I'd assume also in Oakland, Sophia.
Yes, it is. Thank you, gentlemen. I have one quick question. Do you feel that when the communities are pushed out, do you think the same problems follow them? I mean, if we're being pushed out into more farmland-type areas like Stockton, out towards Sacramento, so, I mean, do you think we're still going to have the same problems that are plagued by low-income communities out in these different communities?
That are less dense, but, let me ask you, William Fry, you're the expert.
Well, it's a new community. It's a new environment, but I think there will be some of the same kinds of issues that will be accompanying those movements because, you're talking about a tax base which is not as strong as in the places that other people live, and it means that, the services won't be available as well, and it could be then, as these other communities get hot, and especially in California, we know that the housing prices are highest on the coast, but they're filtering into the inland part of California rather rapidly, and it may be this kind of displacement may also filter further into the center of the state.
Sophia, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's get Ken on the line. Ken is calling from Santa Maria in California.
Hello.
Hi.
I just had a comment. I was compelled to call because I'm an allied health worker. Spend most of my life in the Bay Area, and so being a Bay Area resident, out of tradition, naturally, have been used to defending, the Latino community or the immigrants, just trying to keep a broad perspective. But as an allied health worker, I see the impact on the health system for one thing, and the cost and time that it takes just in translations, in the ER alone, the time that it takes us to take care of a patient because of language barriers. Then, of course, also as time goes on, I'm seeing the economic impact on the African American community, and I'm really conflicted because it feels strange to not be for the underdog. You know, I mean, it's really, and I don't like to use the term of liberal or conservative or when in reference to African Americans, that they don't, it doesn't fit. Of course, I'm tolerant. I you know, out of necessity, I have to be, I should be. But it's really causing a lot of personal conflict with me, and I have just I don't even discuss it anymore with friends or relatives. I don't even discuss it because I'm just conflicted.
When you talk about the economy, you're talking about competition for jobs?
Yes, I am amazed that for years I have not even seen an African American male on a construction site. You just don't find it anymore, and it's like, and I know it's causing a lot of African American males, particularly, to just give up. I mean, there are other factors involved. You know, can't say because of the Latino community, because we all have to work. But there is a big impact, and it's really. I think because it's happened so fast too, that I at least have not been able to adjust to it and to actually formulate my opinions quickly enough.
Well, William Fry, these changes seem glacial, but all of a sudden you talk to somebody like Ken, and they happen very quickly in communities.
Oh, that's absolutely true, especially in a localized labor force when you have a lot of new people coming in who are suitable for the kinds of jobs that are available, and it sort of changes the supply-demand relationship, and the longer-term residency, they aren't going to have the jobs available that they had before, or maybe not at the same wages. We do see, and have seen this since even during the 90s, that there's been an out-migration from California of people that have less than college degrees. They have some college or maybe high school degrees and even less than high school. In other words, there is some suggestion that there is a labor displacement of those longer-term residents to other states where they may be able to get those jobs more easily. So, I think there is something to this. Not everybody can pick up and move, which is a pretty drastic step, but those things do happen in these very dramatically changing areas.
Ken, thanks very much for the call.
One more question. Where can I move to? Where should I move?
Well, anywhere in the Bay Area is going to be expensive, Ken.
I know. That's why I'm not living there now.
Okay. Good.
Right, thanks.
Bye-bye. Obviously, these demographic changes will cause some political changes as well. If you'd like to weigh in on how politics may be affected by these demographic shifts, again, 800-989-8255. We're going to talk with strategists on both sides. First, Joe Garcia, vice president of an organization called the New Democratic Network, or NDN, and he's with us from Miami Beach in Florida. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's a pleasure to be here.
As you look at these census numbers showing increasing numbers, for example, Hispanics in swing states, Colorado, Florida, do you see opportunity there?
Yeah, tremendous opportunity. And what we see is that clearly, the parties are spending more money, both parties. In the last election combined, more money was spent on Hispanics than any time before. In our case, the bulk of our national fundraising went to Hispanics, and we targeted precisely two of the states you mentioned, Colorado, Florida, New Mexico, Nevada, were the central places where we put down campaign and fought hard. And also we found that, the president knows about these new communities. He knows about how important they are. He comes from a state that has a lot of Mexican Americans. His brother built his political reputation among Cuban Americans in South Florida, so they know how to speak to these new migrants, and many of them are Hispanics, and clearly they're Spanish dominant. It's been a good thing for Univision because they've gotten a lot of advertising from both parties. It's going to be quite a challenge.
A cynic might point out Colorado, New Mexico, Nevada, and Florida, and you lost all four.
Yes, but believe it or not, we made increases in the Hispanic community in three of the four. In particular, one of the things that the network focused on was new immigrants. 47% of Hispanics in the United States are Spanish dominant, and so you've got to speak in their language. Clearly, President Bush presents a great challenge. His brother Jeb also, because they both speak Spanish quite fluently, and so we ran campaigns. And in those markets, we made significant increases. In Florida, for example, we made almost a 20-point difference from the last election. In other words, if you add what we gained and what they lost, we almost were 20 points ahead. The problem is we lost in other areas. In Colorado, we had the first Hispanic senator, Democrat in over 40 years enter the United States Senate, which is Ken Salazar, which is very good. And of course, Senator Reid from Nevada is particularly adept at dealing with Hispanics. You know, he's known them. They're on his staff for many years. He's grown up in that community. And so we had significant gains in all three of those states in the Hispanic community, which clearly But it showed. It was a strategy. We worked on it. We had the first time ever both parties had national polls trying to identify the issues that were important to Hispanics. And I have to say here that President Bush is particularly adept at talking about those issues of the heart, those emotional issues that Hispanics who believe, as all first-generation immigrants do, in the American dream, in ways that made them do quite risky things to get to the United States, he knows how to speak to them. I mean, there are commercials that President Bush shot that almost imply that we're going to give you back the Southwest if you vote for the Republicans. Clearly, those are run in Spanish. Clearly, those are targeted to the Hispanic voters, and not you don't have the same message in English. But clearly, it's a challenge because he knows how to speak in the language of emotion that is so important to many voters, and in particular Hispanics and first generation, which want to be known and feel very rewarded by the fact that the president knows he's out there and he's speaking to them. And it's a particular challenge with us in the Democratic Party, because in many respects, many of the programs that have made it possible for Hispanics to have a piece of the American dream, to enter the American system, to have health care, to be able to be full-fledged citizens, to have the laws that make it possible.
Joe Garcia, thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate your time. We're talking about new demographic shifts. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. During his appearance at the Latino Small Business Economic Conference in May, Republican National Committee Chair Ken Melman touted the formation of a new Hispanic advisory committee to help the party pull in Latino votes. We're joined now by one of the members of that group, Rosario Marin, former U.S. Treasurer, currently the chair of the California Waste Management Board. She joins us from Southern California. Nice to speak with you today.
Thank you so very much for having me. I really appreciate that.
And I know that the Republicans are pleased. They made some inroads in the Hispanic voters last time around. These new census figures suggest an even greater concentration will be rewarded.
Absolutely. There is no question about that. I think that one of the most important things that we need to remind ourselves, everybody, is that Hispanics will be the weight, if you will, that will help elect the next senators and the U.S. senators and the next president. That is, it's very clear. Both parties understand that. I was listening to Phil Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate what he has said, except that his figures are somewhat, the ones that he mentioned are somewhat disingenuous. We made significant gains in all of the states. As a matter of fact, as you may know, it is the Hispanic community that is credited with having the president win the White House again. Because no matter what anybody says, our figures show that he earned 44% of the Hispanic vote. That can only come at the expense of Democrats losing the Hispanic vote, or losing the amount of votes that they had at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, the president understands that. The party understands that at the national level. We are seeing incredible resources allocated to the Hispanic community. It's more than reaching out. You know, the president knows this community. He knows that there's a special place in the president's heart for the Hispanic community,
and that has
demonstrated time and time again.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I did want to bring William Fry back into the conversation. What information do we have on how politically Hispanics are reacting to their new environs as they spread out all over the country?
Well, I think that it will take a little while for the Hispanic vote to emerge in some of these newer states. I think both the commentators are correct that in states like Nevada and Colorado and Florida, there's a huge surge of Hispanics, and they're certainly worth targeting in. But some of the data we've had from the census, the 2000 census, and since, have shown that the people coming to the newer states, the North Carolinas and Georgias, take them a while to get registered, take them a while to get involved. involved in the electoral process. So I think it's in the more established states where Hispanics already have a very strong foothold where they'll have the biggest short-term inference. But further down the road, and especially among the young population, I think both parties are wise to keep an eye on the Hispanics.
Yeah, let me just share something that I think...
Very, very quickly. We have very few seconds left.
In Oklahoma, Hispanics voted 75% for President Bush.
Rosario Marin, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very kindly.
Rosario Marin, former U.S. Treasurer, currently serves on the Republican National Committee's Hispanic Advisory Committee. Also, our thanks to William Fry, a demographer and a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution, co-author of America by the Numbers. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
When we come back from a short break, Devo, and that's Devo frontman Mark Mothersbaugh, will be with us. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.